Welcome to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. My name is Peter Woodbury, and today I'll be speaking with Pam Grout. She's a New York Times bestselling author of over 20 books. She's also written 2 plays, a soap opera, and a TV series. Her most recent book, E Squared, 9 Do-It-Yourself Energy Experiments That Prove Thoughts Create Reality. Join me in this conversation with Pam Grout. So hi, Pam. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, I'm honored to be here. Thanks for asking me.
Oh, it's great. And I have understood that you've known about Edgar Cayce for a while, and I also know that you're an author of I think 16 books, is it?
Actually, I just on Sunday turned in my manuscript for my 20th book.
Oh, your 20th? Okay.
I think I'm behind. My website hasn't been updated, and I think it does say 16 books on there, but I have written several books since then. In fact, I'm starting this 222 Foundation. It's kind of interesting because my 20th book comes out in 2020. So there's 3 more twos for you.
But, oh, that's great. Yeah. There's some nice numerology.
Just turn it in.
With that. Well, let's start with just how did you find out about Edgar Cayce? Or do you have a story about how Edgar Cayce came into your consciousness? And
wow. I've known about Edgar Cayce for so long that I don't remember exactly how I first heard about him. Mm-hmm. But I knew he was someone who was so connected to the divine and had so much great information. I remember one time hearing that if you had an almond a day, that you'd never get cancer. And I think that was something that Edgar Cayce had said.
Yes.
So I've been sort of religiously eating almonds ever since then. But I bet I've known about him for 20 years at least, you know, and I've read some of his work. And I'm so excited about coming out there because, you know, I've always wanted to know more. And it'll be really fun to be out there in, you know, where his actual foundation is.
Well, in 2 of your more recent books, E Squared and E Cubed, mm-hmm. you touch on how thoughts create reality. And that's really a concept. You know, Cayce said thoughts are things. They're very important. What's your take on how thoughts create our reality?
Well, I've been really interested in this topic for a long time. In fact, that's probably maybe Edgar Cayce's how I first got into it. Mm-hmm. But what I do in the books, and it's kind of an interesting approach, is we've known about this for a long time, you know, ask and ye shall receive. I mean, it goes back, whatever, that what we're thinking about, we animate into our life whatever we're putting our attention upon. Mm-hmm. And so in the books that made it kind of unique, I think, and why they took off and people loved them so much, I actually made experiments for people to try, and I set them up like with lab report sheets and literally gave people 48 hours, give this a try. Because I think a lot of times we know things theoretically and we believe them, but we don't always use them. And so this was like real time. You're going to see it with your eyes. So I think that's why this book, because I mean, the concepts I talk about are things Edgar Cayce talked about, are things that have been talked about, like I said, forever. But I think my book just hit a chord because, you know, there's real practical things, and it was all set up like a science experiment, and you're going to do this and you're going to see if this really works or not. Do your thoughts really create your reality? And I mean, I cannot tell you how many emails I get in my inbox saying, they always start with, you are never going to believe this because, you know, they tried one of the experiments and like they had this remarkable result. It's like, wow. I mean, people are just blown away. I mean, I have a section in my second book, Cupid, it's called, well, duh. I mean, you know, this stuff really does work, but people seem surprised sometimes when, like, wow, I got this most amazing manifestation, or I'm thinking about this and this happened. And so it's been really fun for me to, of course, I've always believed it, but, you know, I've gotten all this confirmation and all my readers that send me these great stories of what happened when they did do the experiment. So
now one thing, like I've noticed that like thoughts creating reality, and I guess that synchronicity can be uh-huh. related into that. But what have you felt that, or is that happening more often for people in general, or is there, or do we achieve some kind of state where, I'll give you an example, because I've noticed in the last 2 months, thoughts and manifesting has just been like off the charts. Like I was already used to it, but like, for example, just today, I have a hybrid car, and uh-huh. it's got almost 200,000 miles. So the hybrid battery needs to be replaced, and so the replacement cost is more than the value of the car. Well, today when I was going through my mail, I got an auto care place that does hybrid battery work, and it's a place that I had thought about, heard about. And I just happened to get a coupon to go there and get a discount on, and I had done nothing. there was nothing online that I had done that would put my address in play with that. Mm-hmm. And then there was another one where a friend was talking about wanting a session with a local well-known psychic, and just a little bit of things happened. The next day, that psychic called this person saying, hey, do you want an appointment? Like, it was just this two instances of shocking for me, synchronicity or thoughts becoming reality. So do you feel that that's happening in general more for people, or do people achieve a status where that happens more often?
Well, you know what I would say? In fact, one of my theories is that we're already connected to everything anyway.
Yes.
So once you put your attention on something, then you do animate it into your life. And I think as you become interested in this, and as you become more open to this, you start noticing how you are connected to all those things. So I do think you could say, or it appears to be that it's speeding up, that more and more people are noticing those kind of things. Like, to give you an example with this 222. I mean, every day people send me some picture of 222. And that was a synchronicity story that my daughter and I started, but literally now I've got people all over the world sending me their 222s. So I think once you decide there's something you're interested in the book, I call it
starts
Volkswagen.
To resonate. Yeah. Back.
Yeah. I call it the Volkswagen Jetta experiment. And I kind of had funny names for them because, you know, say you want to get a particular car, and I happen to have, I think, the same car you do. And I did just put a new battery in my car just real recently. But anyway, once you want a particular car, then suddenly you think, oh, I'm going to be the only one in town to own this. But suddenly you notice everybody has that car. So it kind of works a little bit like that. In fact, one of the experiments is to pick something like that, mm-hmm. and then just see how many you start noticing. I mean, they may have been there all along, and maybe then you're just, you know, aware of it. But I mean, even things like this one girl, she decided she was looking for yellow butterflies, you know, during her 48 hours. That's what she chose. Within that time frame, her boyfriend, and he didn't even know she was reading the book, he didn't know she was doing this experiment, he brought her home a butterfly house. I mean, he just walks in the front door with a butterfly house with, of course, some yellow butterflies. So, I mean, it's just interesting either, because that was something that wasn't just always there that she just noticed. So I don't know whether her thoughts, you know, said to her, were radioed out to her boyfriend and said, hey, I'm going to take her home a butterfly house. But anyway, yeah, I do think we're kind of connected to everything. We start noticing more when we make that intention, when it becomes important to us, when we're aware of that power of our thoughts. Mm.
Now, you had mentioned the 222 Foundation, and I know that that's connected to your daughter who passed away in October.
Right. Well, we had a thing. She loved 222. It was kind of a funny thing. She started which was in junior high, and she started a Facebook page, you know, the amazing awesomeness of 222, you know, when you're in junior high.
Yeah.
But so she and her friends, like, they'd call her up exactly at 222, or anytime somebody'd say, how much does this cost? She'd say $2.22, or what time is it? 222, even if it was 560, or I guess there's not five, even if it was 522, you know, she would always say that. So right when she was really into that, we went on two trips that summer. We went to Alaska. We stayed in a hotel room and happened to be 222. Later that summer, we were in London, walked into our hotel room, again, 222. Wow. It became a thing that we, like, whenever we'd see a picture, we would send it to each other. And it just became a thing for her and I. And so when I was thinking of some kind of foundation to honor her memory, she was all about just, you know, really loving and creating. And so anyway, the foundation is you know, going to be about the things she stood for. But I decided to call it the 222 Foundation. Mm-hmm. And I found out there is another 222 Foundation. Who knew? But so now it's called the Taz Gratz 222 Foundation. So, and we are giving the first recipient award on February 16th. I wanted it to be on 222, and it will be on 222 most years. But I happen to be speaking out in California on 223. My workshop begins at 9:30, so I needed to fly out there on 2:22. So we're doing it the week before.
So, yeah, that makes sense. So what a nice, I think there's been, there's the whole 111 or the 1111. That's
right.
Another one where people are noticing, and it's becoming a collective consciousness. And then I think like 2:22 or 3:33. There's and do you put any particular meaning to the numbers, or it's just that it's something that if it has meaning to you, you'll begin to notice it, and it's almost like it's an echo from the universe, kind of showing that you're being listened to and attended to?
Well, I there are some people that are into numerology, you know, have sent me some of the meanings of 222. Mm-hmm. For us, it was more just a symbol. I mean, it could have been three turtles. It could have been anything. Right. But and I do think the number repeating itself is sort of a sign from the universe. Mm-hmm. One morning I went out for a walk. This has been 3 or 4 years ago. I thought, I'm going to try to see the multiples of every single number. And I mean, I'm kind of walking out in the country. I'm not even like in a, like, you know, if you're in New York City, you're going to see those numbers everywhere. Right. But I was walking out in the country between license plates, between the way the clouds were forming. I saw every single, you know, 111, 222, 333, all the way through to 999. And I even surprised myself. That's one thing that's so funny. Even though I believe in these principles, I know them. Sometimes, wow, it even surprised me that I was able to find those nine series of numbers. So I think they're just a way of, like, we might notice that more than we notice 247 or something. You know, we would just notice if there's three together. So I think it's just a way of kind of like a nod from the universe saying, hey, I love you. You know, I have a thing about, you know, I call it the Carol Burnett principle. You know, she used to always pull on her ear, I think it was, to let her grandmother know, you know, hey, hi, grandma.
Yeah.
So I think that a lot of us will have a particular sign, and that's our little thing. Like, I know Pope Francis is into roses, and he always would say a white rose when he's needing some kind of a sign. Yeah. I think people have, you know, their own personal thing that somehow or another the universe has established with them. And I guess for me, it happens to be 222. So,
yeah, I my mother passed away, and I began to see a lot of ladybugs. I remember at the airport, I was given a pen with a ladybug. And there was just, it was both living ladybugs and then other symbols. And to this day, when I think of her, oftentimes a ladybug will show up. And so that is, like you're saying, it's kind of my resonance with her, the symbol of her, and how there's some kind of a communication, or it has a meaning to me, kind of maybe similar to what 222 means to you in the connection with your daughter.
Right. Yeah. My father passed actually in April, and when I was young, we used to go out on the roads and we'd get turtles. And so we entered turtle races, which is a thing my dad and I had. I have not seen a turtle probably in 30 years. But the day I was driving out to his memorial service, I said to my cousin, that was a turtle. And I was actually driving, and I'm glad I didn't hit it, but I thought, wow. It was like in the old days when my dad, you know, he was a young minister, and we're driving around the country roads, and there was a turtle. So here, after 30 years later, the day of his, you know, service, there's a turtle. So yeah, I do think, you know, it's fun to get those winks from the other side.
And in my kind of you know, experience with the New Age, I remember when the book and the movie The Secret came out, and that seemed to kind of bring into larger consciousness this the idea of manifesting and thoughts becoming our reality. What's your take on that, and what would you say is different or the same, or what have you added from that concept, or like,
well,
of manifesting?
That book did take it out to the mass consciousness. I mean, I think you're so right about that. I mean, the stuff that Edgar Cayce and others have talked about forever, now it's like everybody knows about.
Yeah.
In fact, at one time after my book came out, I was given some Law of Attraction award, like the best book or something, Law of Attraction. I'm like, and I don't even think I used the term Law of Attraction in the book, but indeed that is exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'd say, how does my book relate? Again, it gives people experiments to see if the Law of Attraction works. I mean, that's one way to call it. I mean, there's so many synonyms for this, you know, for God, for the universe, for, you know, divine intelligence, for manifestation, you know, all that. There's just many, many ways you can say it. And I would say it doesn't matter what you call it, it just matters that you call it forth. So anyway, I would say mine has many of those same principles, but again, it does have real practical tools that people can use and fill out the little forms and do these experiments.
Yeah, I think that's what what stands out to me as being really unique. Or I mean, the you know, Cayce was really big into putting things into practical terms.
Yeah.
He says it's overly theoretical, it's what can be applied. It's the application that matters. And I think what you're bringing in your books is telling people, write this down, put pen to paper. And it's almost in that process you get more of you take it from the etheric into the physical and begin that manifesting or creating process.
Right, and you're even paying attention. Mm-hmm. Like, I've noticed for me, if I don't write something down or even take note of it, it will disappear in my consciousness. Like, I think so many miracles are happening all the time, but unless I write them down, they may be gone. Do you know how dreams are?
Yeah.
I notice for myself, if I don't write that dream down right away, it may be gone. Like even 10 minutes later, it can sometimes be gone. And I think that's what happens with miracles. They're happening all around us, but we need to stop and register them. I think it's so important to write it down, tell someone. I'm really big. I have this thing called possibility posses, and we get together every month and we talk about miracles. We talk about this stuff because it just needs, we need to be reminded of this all the time. We need this conversation. To me, it's the only conversation worth having.
So you create the consciousness. Yeah. And then whatever you bring into consciousness, you start to pay attention to. Because I really agree. I think, like I'll say it oftentimes, that every day has miracles and has awful things. And you'll find, depending what you're looking for, you'll find them. You know, there's a quote that I like that says, a pessimist is rarely disappointed. Because that's what they're looking for. You certainly will find it.
Yeah.
That's great.
In fact, the last experiment in E squared is about registering all the things that are going right, like literally writing them down and taking note of. Yeah. I mean, even things like, say, the receptionist at a certain place smiled at you. I mean, those are little miracles, too, that we tend to overlook because we're so busy worrying about all these other things. And it's kind of a way of being in the now, too, because if you're out there sort of looking for miracles, looking for those really beautiful things that are happening all the time, you know, you have that choice. You can focus on that, or you can focus on the news, which is really always an anomaly, in my opinion, what's happening. I mean, the real news is what's happening right around us, and it's usually it's beautiful things.
Yes, like what you pay attention to, it grows. Like you're saying, if you pay attention to 222, that becomes more, you manifest that. So if you pay attention to miracles or blessings, you do draw more of that, because it's all out there. It's almost like, you know, there's always this question about, does life have meaning or is it meaningless? And like Carl Jung said, it depends on you. It depends on what you're building in your consciousness. So I think, you know, it's nice that these older concepts that maybe were a little more esoteric are becoming more accessible to the average person, and that they can do personal experiments to help manifest this and you know, build this consciousness in our in our world. Now, in one of your books, you talk about the importance of gratitude. And could you say more about that? I think it's in Thank and Grow Rich. We talk about the importance of gratitude.
Yeah. Do you remember that movie where Jack Nicholson's up on the witness stand and Tom Cruise is badgering him?
Yeah.
Colonel Jessup, I think, is the character he's playing. And he, you know, I want the truth. I want the truth. Right. And finally, Colonel Jessup says, you can't handle the truth. Yeah. And I think that's what happens when we're not on the frequency, what I call a frequency of joy and gratitude. If we're not thinking about all these blessings, not being grateful, that's why we miss a lot of the miracles. In fact, I sort of started the book saying, I wrote this book. This is for you people, you naysayers. Like I said, I get hundreds of emails from people saying, wow, this is so cool. But every now and then I get an email from someone that says, it didn't work for me. Why does this not work for me? And so that's why this book, you can't handle the truth unless you can get it, unless you can realize that there are miracles and you can get it, that there are so many joyful things happen. So it's really, again, about your frequency. I always talk about, you can't watch ABC if you're tuned into NBC, you know, or if you go through McDonald's and order chicken McNuggets, you're not going to get a Big Mac. You know, it depends on what you're putting out there. So anyway, the gratitude book is why it's so important. And it's called Think and Grow Rich. Obviously, it's a takeoff on Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. But I think gratitude is actually more important than what we think, because if we're thinking gratitude, then we're just open. You know, like the universe can bless us. I feel like the universe wants to bless us. It's right there wanting to bestow its gifts, its signs, all of its guidance to us. But we can't handle the truth because we're too busy being grumpy. So I think gratitude is just a great portal that anybody can get their mind around.
It's sort of like, go ahead.
You have to even do it through gritted teeth and, okay, I'm going to be grateful. You know what I mean? You practice it until it becomes a normal, natural thing.
And it's sort of like, I think in scripture where it talks about how, you know, pray and then act as if your prayer has been answered. So it's like, it's like putting your mind towards the result, towards the positivity. And then that's part of how it manifests. So in a way, you're filling that out, you know, making that more clear for people. And then also earlier, I was thinking about how, you know, there's been many metaphysical studies, including Edgar Cayce, of just some of the miracles of Jesus. And in one of his miracles where he resurrects the dead girl, he empties the room of people. And one of the explanations of that was that there was so little faith among those who would have been there. He had to get them out of the space to create the faith for this resurrection, or this, you know, the girl coming back to life. So you're right.
That is so cool. I didn't even know that. Yes. That's really great. I knew that he had done it. I didn't realize that he had done
that. That was one of why he cleared out the room. He's got, I got to have a, you know, I got to have believers and, you know, faith to make this, make it happen.
Yeah, it creates that resonant field. That's really powerful. I'm so glad you told me that story.
Yeah, I like, you know, the I like taking these New Age concepts and really showing how old they are. You know, they're rooted in real, you know, spiritual traditions. And I just think that when they were in those traditions, sometimes they're a little bit esoteric. And I think a lot of what we're trying to do in the New Age is to try to get it more accessible to the layperson, so that these blessings, whatever you want to call them, just can become more part of our everyday life. And I think that, you know, I'm grateful for you and people like you that are doing that work. And I'm glad that you're receiving. I hope you're feeling you're receiving the blessings of doing that, of that manifestation.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Because
sure.
I, you know, I think there's nothing. I think when you're spiritually minded, and you're helping people kind of. You know, what I think you're doing is you're helping people access God or whatever you want to call it, that there's this creative flow. And so many people believe that God isn't accessible to them, that God is, you know, out there for other people. And these practical experiments help them enter into a connection or relationship with the creative sources, is what Casey liked to call it, instead of God sometimes, you know, depending
right.
on, some people resonate
the word
with different.
God, as I talk about, has so much baggage to a lot of people.
Very much.
So a lot of people are like, I don't want anything to do with that.
Right.
But I kind of compare it to electricity. It's always available, but it depends on, you can plug your toaster in and make a bagel, you know, toast a bagel, or you can try to toast the bagel without your toaster being plugged in. It's not going to happen. So I like, and also, you know, you also don't have to, you know, put ashes on your head and do all these things for the electricity to work. So when you think of this force more in terms as you think of electricity, it's always there. It's not judging, you're worthy, you're not worthy. It's like, it's just always there. So when I talk, in fact, when I wrote this book, and I actually had written it even before The Secret came out, it's called God Doesn't Have Bad Hair Days. And it didn't do anything. But then I changed the title, and it came out 10 years later. I went ahead and wrote 3 books for National Geographic, did, you know, other things. But I changed the title, and I called it E squared, you know, take off on Einstein's E equals MC squared. So we're talking about energy, not God.
Yes.
And so, and then it, you know, took off, became, you know, 40 languages. It's been translated into, it became this huge phenomenon. But it's basically the same book.
Well,
so
you know,
energy kind of appeals to people, I
think. Well, you're right in sync with Edgar Cayce, because he said that the closest energy in the world, in our physical world, to the God energy is electricity.
Oh,
so
it's really?
You've tapped into that. That's really the, because I've thought of it too, because, you know, you can use electricity to heal people, but it can, you know, it can be used to kill. It depends on, the creative energies are there. You have free will to kind of use them one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're trying to help people use those energies constructively, because people probably are not aware how destructively they use them through their pessimistic or negative thoughts.
Oh, I know. It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. So you also talk about sometimes that dreams are important, but that you, how do you work with keeping people motivated, like overcoming obstacles in their motivations? I remember that was one of the topics in one of your books.
Well, I always like to say we need to make this fun because we want it to be sustainable, right? And if something feels like it's something you have to do, then it's not necessarily fun. So I really, like when I do my workshops, I call them play shops, and I talk about reverse finishing school, because, I mean, you don't have to tell a kid to, you know, follow their dreams, or a kid, I mean, they're busy doing that, but somehow or another, all these cultural paradigms come in. And then we, you know, lose sight of that. So one of my biggest tips, or one of the things I really believe in fact, I don't know if your listeners will have already heard of my AA 2.0 program, but I you want me to tell you about that?
Yes, please.
That program?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, you've heard of the 12-step program. Well, that's 12 steps. And, you know, it's a great program, but I'm all about smooth and easy. Let's make this fun. So I started what I call AA 2.0, you know, the second version of AA. And AA stands for amazing awesomeness. And so here's how it works. Step 1 is you get up in the morning and you say something amazingly awesome is going to happen to me today. So, you know, it may not be grammatically perfect, but you know, you're expecting something.
Yeah,
big.
You're seeding that.
First thing you do, something really cool is going to happen to me today. And then the second step is I text three blessings from the day before to my possibility posses, one of them that I've been doing this for 6 years to every day. And the thing that's different about this gratitude practice, because I've always been big on gratitude. Oh, you know, I love my career. I love my dog, you know, all those kind of things. But this is, it has to be something different. So every day I'm responsible for a new blessing to tell to my posse. So I'm out there scouting blessings and miracles. I mean, that's my focus. That's what I'm looking at. So that's like this really easy program that, you know, it's kind of fun and people enjoy doing. So anyway, that was something I started, I think, after E Squared came out. I think I write about that in maybe Think and Grow Rich.
Well, a question I have for you is how do you deal with, you know, the shadow aspects, or, you know, the days that we don't feel like, you know, we're going to tackle the world, or when we get a little down or anxious? How do you work with that? Or what are your thoughts about just the you know, the weather of life? You know, sometimes it's clear and sometimes the clouds roll in. I've learned to kind of treat it like weather. Know that some days my mind is going to be clear. Some days I'm going to have a heavier stuff. I just try to get through it.
Yeah, well, I talk about the two magic words, and that's it's okay. Because I think sometimes when we get in that space, oh, I shouldn't be feeling this, or, you know, we feel bad and we start beating ourselves up, and that just puts up even more resistance. So again, to go back to that, it's okay. Those are the two magic words. It's okay that I feel this. It's, you know, and also to try to recognize that there are blessings in everything. You know, that there really are blessings come out. We don't always.
It's a learning experience too.
Right.
Have you heard that they say don't shoot all over yourself?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
That sometimes is helpful. Just kind of being present and, you know, in the moment. Now, one of the talks that you'll be giving here and have given before is do what you love and love what you do. Could you tell me a little bit about that talk or that idea?
Yeah, well, I've always believed that you're going to be the best at what you really love to do. And again, going back to those cultural paradigms that we learn as we get older, we're taught that making money is more important, or that, you know, having security is more important. And I think we do our best work when we forget all of that and we do go for what we really love. Like, for example, I love to write. That's always been my gift, my joy. And so that's what I follow, is, you know, follow that thing. I always say follow your beat, you know, that thing that makes you come alive. So I think when you do that, you're going to find meaningful, rewarding work. And I think we've had this paradigm for so long that work's not fun and that work's hard to do, or that, you know, I've got to make. So I just think it's a lot of rewriting old paradigms. You know, what if everybody's out doing what they, you know, most want to do, because that's what they're going to be really good at. That's their, you know, that's their gift. That's the thing that, I mean, there's a reason they love doing that. And a lot of, sometimes you have to go back to when you're a kid, because you know, then we've been layered and layered and layered with all these, you know, the narrative of the culture about the way things are, that you don't even, what do I love to do? But if you go back and think about what it was like when you were a kid, that's why I do this reverse finishing school. You know, we need to go back when, you know, we were sitting there at a table of Legos and going, oh, I don't know if I can do this right. You know, you're just building your Legos. You're just creating things. One of my books also is about creativity and spirituality, that's part of God. I mean, God created us in his image and likeness. And of course, who's more creative than God? So I do think that all of us in some, well, I think we're creative all the time, like we're creating with our thoughts. Again, sometimes it might be negative, but we're always creating. But I mean, I'm talking about even creating, you know, coming forth of those ideas and the things that bring your life meaning. So I think it's very important to listen to all of that.
Now, did you grow up in a family with a mindset of you should follow the rules, or did you grow up with a be who you're meant to be, or like, did you have to overcome the obstacles, or were you facilitated by your upbringing, or a little bit of both?
A little bit of both. My father was a Methodist minister, so there was, you know, some of that, and he was a very positive, upbeat guy. But I, you know, there's also like, oh, you shouldn't study writing. You need, you know, this is my mom, you know, you need to, you should study computer programming. This is when computers were just coming in. That'll be a much more secure, safe thing. But I mean, I love to write. So that's what I was going to do. And I started even in second grade writing because, you know, I was reading all these books. I think anybody that reads a lot of things, I'm going to write too. So I was a big reader. And then I was just writing stories way back in second grade. And then, you know, when I did go to college, it's like, okay, what can I do with this thing I love? And of course, I became a journalist, so I worked for a newspaper. So I did sort of the practical aspect of the thing that I love. And I stayed employed for sort of a short amount of time and have been out on my own doing my own thing for quite a long time. And lucky because I, again, I believed using the principles of Edgar Cayce, using these principles that I could, that that could be possible. Because until you believe something's possible, it will never be possible for you. So you really have to embrace that that could be possible. And I think, again, going back to those, you know, that narrative that we all believe in, that there's only one way to make money, you have to get a job. I mean, there, you know, if you are willing to be more open to other narratives and the ideas of what I think the universe really does work, but it's always wanting to bless us and bestow us with guidance and gifts. I mean, I think that's the way it's meant to be. And I think this cultural narrative that we learn is the problem, is the where we get in trouble, where the resistance comes up, where the guilt comes up, where the bad days come up, because we're not, you know, being true to what I believe is truth. So
what I'm hearing is that you had had a calling. And you had a somewhat of a belief in yourself. And then how did you go from the journalism to writing your first book? What was that transition like? And what was your intention? Like, what did you want to, you know, I think as a journalist, you're reporting the news, but then it seemed like you wanted to infuse your own kind of ideas into print.
Right. Well, I like to joke that I used to be a member of the world's largest terrorist organization because I was a journalist, but I actually was a feature writer. So I wasn't really writing straight news. I was doing features, and even features are kind of upbeat. And I was a stringer for People magazine, and I was always angels and heroes, you know, people that are doing good in the world. So I've always kind of, that's kind of been my beat anyway.
I see.
But when I was in journalism school, I took a class on magazine article writing. So even when I was working, you know, my first jobs out of journalism school, I was sending off query letters because I'd learned how to do that in college. So I was sending off query letters to magazines. And just little by little, I was getting more and more assignments. And so then I was able to take off on my own. But as far as, I think the thing that's so great about being a writer is you get to write what interests you. You know, if you're, especially if you're a freelancer, what interests you? And that's how I got into writing more about, I do, you know, half my books are travel books and half my books are these spiritual, self-helpy kind of books. Well, those are two topics that I love. And again, as a writer, that's my gift. I get to, you know, maybe writers aren't known for making millions of dollars, but they do get to do something that's so much more valuable in my opinion. And that is they get to do what they love. And I get to learn about what I love. So writing these books is really me getting to pursue my passion that I'm going to do anyway. So why not write about it? So it's kind of, I feel like it's just a gift that we writers have.
Oh, I would love that. I would love to be paid to travel and then to do spiritual things and then also eat. That would probably be my next book.
Well, travel writing, you get a lot of good food, let me tell you.
That's good. Yeah. Well, we're coming to the end of our time. Is there anything that you'd like to address? Anything that you can think of that you'd like to add to the conversation? I'd be happy to hear from you.
You know, it's funny you ask that because people often ask me that. I never had a really good answer, but just in this new book that I just wrote, you know, I was thinking of, it's a question sometimes people ask, what would you put on a billboard or whatever? And I realized that one of the things that I probably, you know, because I'm a big proponent of Course in Miracles. And so I think the biggest takeaway that maybe, that, you know, that voice that's in our head, you know, that little roommate in the head, as Michael Singer calls it, we spend too much time listening to that voice in our head, which that's where the cultural story gets put into too. So to really question that voice in the head, you know, that little voice that's constantly judging and analyzing and trying to figure things out.
Critical, the inner critic.
Right. So I like, don't pay attention to the voice in the head. You know, say, you know, thank you for sharing or whatever. So I don't know. That just occurred to me. That might be one of the highest things people could do is to realize that's not who they really are. Like in Course in Miracles says, my thoughts do not mean anything. And by that, I mean, our thoughts create a reality, but are just those that, you know, ongoing narrative that's in our head. We shouldn't take it so seriously.
Yes. Good. Well, thank you for Thanks for adding that to the conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Good. Well, the time has flown by. I've really enjoyed our conversation. And I look forward to you being here at the ARE in the future and continued contact with your work.
Yeah, sounds great. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Oh, good. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Okay, you too.